overthrowing that regime is something which should be done by the nation of Iraq, not any other country.
Think about the implications of what you're saying. You're saying that the leaders of other nations are viable, and that is not an acceptable proposition.
A conscientious man would be cautious how he dealt with blood.
The neoconservative hawks who have hijacked U.S. foreign policy have Saudi Arabia very much in their sights.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, February 26, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Every vote on the 15-member UN Security Council is crucial to the U.S. as it lobbies heavily each member for support of an invasion into Iraq. High-level U.S. officials have been dispatched to key African countries on the council like Angola, Guinea, and Cameroon and warned to vote yes for the war or risk paying a heavy price. The timing of the administration's arm-twisting tactics coincides with aid requests from poor African nations, giving rise to charges of vote buying. According to one U.S. diplomat, the order from the White House was to use all diplomatic means necessary. Another U.S. diplomat said that really means everything. At yesterday's press briefing, White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer refuted reporters' claims that the U.S. was buying votes.
No, the president is not offering quid pro quos. This is a time for nations to do what they estimate is the right thing to do to promote the peace.
Just to follow up on Mexico, too, is it true that that the administration is willing to give Mexico some sort of immigration agreements like amnesty or guest worker programs to assure the Mexican vote, as the
press
is pointing out today and is quoting actually two different diplomats from the State Department?
It's exactly as I indicated, that we have on this issue a matter of diplomacy and a matter of the merits. We ask each nation on the Security Council to weigh the merits and make a decision about war and peace. And if anybody thinks that there are nations like Mexico whose vote could be bought on the basis of a trade issue or something else like that, I think you're doing grave injustice to the independence and the judgment of the leaders of other nations.
If you allowed me, the French press is quoting actually two different diplomats from the United States State Department. They're highlighting that the United States is giving some sort of agreements or benefits to Colombia, Ethiopia, Syria, and other non-members of the Security Council.
I haven't seen the story, and you already have the answer about what this will be decided on, but think about the implications of what you're saying. You're saying that the leaders of other nations are viable, and that is not an acceptable proposition. Thank you.
White House press spokesperson Ari Fleischer being laughed off the stage by reporters at yesterday's press briefing. While as war preparations heat up, Peace Watch checked in earlier today with Ali Abunima, editor of the Electronic Intifada and ElectronicIraq.com, to gauge reaction to the Bush administration's war plans in the Arab world.
You may have seen a recent poll in Germany that said more than half of Germans think that the United States is the greatest danger to world peace, while something like 20% thought Iraq was the greatest danger to world peace. I'd say that feelings in the Arab world are at least in line with German opinion, and probably people feel much greater unanimity that they feel a threat from the United States rather than from Iraq. I came back from Jordan about 2 weeks ago, and I can tell you that everyone I talked to there was far more afraid and worried about what the United States is doing in the region than anything Iraq could do.
But at the same time, there are countries like Qatar, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia whose governments are working with the U.S., even though the vast majority of their people, the people in those countries, seem to strongly oppose the war plans. How do you explain that?
I think this is part of the with us or against us syndrome. You have in the Gulf some very weak governments which have a real crisis of legitimacy, which are really dependent on the United States for their security. Qatar is a tiny country with a couple of hundred thousand people. Most of the people who live there are foreign guest workers. And so they're more of an exception, and I see their cooperation cooperation with the United States as being quite opportunistic. And these are very weak countries which really have always relied since their independence.
Saudi Arabia is weak?
Saudi Arabia is very weak. Saudi Arabia is quite different, though, because the Saudi government do not want this war. And they made that very clear, and they have not been as cooperative as the United States wants. So what I'm saying is the Saudis are doing their best to limit their involvement. But the problem for all of these governments is they are not strong enough to stand up to the United States. And so that puts them in a position of trying to straddle this very fine line. None of them are being very vocal in their opposition to U.S. policy, but neither are any of them openly on the side of the United States. That's a very different situation than we have in Europe, where countries have really lined up on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say that Saudi Arabia is really not strong enough to stand up to the U.S., what about the oil well factor here?
Well, of course, Saudi Arabia has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, and the Saudis used the so-called oil weapon once before in 1973 when the United States backed Israel in the war that year. And since then, the United States has determined never to allow OPEC or the Arab countries to use oil in that way again. So you have a situation now where the Saudi regime is extremely weak internally, and they are, in fact, relying on the United States for defense. So you really can't turn against your own sponsor. You can't bite the hand that feeds you, so to speak. So you also have to remember that in the past few months, we've seen a very intense campaign of vilification against Saudi Arabia in Washington. And the neoconservative hawks who have hijacked U.S. foreign policy, the folks gathered around Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and all these folks who came from the ultra-right neoconservative think tanks, have taught Saudi Arabia very much in their sights. So what some of these Arab governments are trying to do is to lie low, hope they make it through the war, put themselves in the best position for what comes afterwards, and hope that they don't rock the boat too much. And so it's really a game of survival for them.
Do you foresee this war destabilizing other nations in the region if it is indeed carried out?
Well, the war, I think, will be very destabilizing, and in ways that we can't yet predict. We're still suffering and paying the price. The blowback from U.S. Support for the Afghan Mujahideen in the 1980s. And look at the situation in Afghanistan today. You don't have a central government that's in charge of the country. You don't have democracy. You don't have peace. You have chaos and anarchy and disorder, and people in a desperate situation. There was an article in The Independent yesterday in which the journalist outlined feeling in Kabul, astonishment that the United States is calling its operation in Afghanistan a success. So these are the people who, I mean, in Washington, who now want to do the same in Iraq. They have absolutely no idea, and I would say no intention, of bringing democracy to Iraq. And so I think they are going to replace an Iraqi military dictator with an American military dictator, and let Turkey into northern Iraq as the price for Turkish participation, which could create a very bloody situation for Kurds in northern Iraq. Turkey has a long history of severe repression, of ethnic cleansing, really, against Turks in its own against Kurds in its own territory. And now the U.S. may give Turkey a free hand in the north of Iraq. You might have Iran coming into the south of Iraq. And this is a situation which I think is so dangerous that you have to really be filled with hubris and arrogance to think it's an easy thing to go in and change a government in Iraq.
Do you think there is a plan or a strategy on the part of the Arab states in the region to respond, react, take some sort of action against this impending war against Iraq?
No, I mean, there evidently isn't. I mean, the Arab League tried to organize a summit and failed to agree on a date. And the basic contradiction, as you pointed out, is that some of the Arab states are, if not enthusiastically going along with U.S. plans, at least participating and providing facilities, countries like Kuwait and Qatar and Bahrain, which hosts the U.S. fleet there, and to a lesser extent Saudi Arabia. And then you have states which are trying to really walk a fine line and straddle the middle, like Jordan. And then you have countries which are openly hostile to this war, like Syria and Egypt to a lesser extent. So the point is, you have no unity. You have division among the Arabs, as you do among the European governments. But where I think there is unanimity is on the streets, where Arab public opinion is very much in line with world public opinion. And the way these governments try and handle it is by managing public opinion quite harshly and cracking down on any signs of dissent. But how long they can go on doing that, when people feel total despair, watching Israel carry out, day-to-day atrocities in the occupied territories, when you have Israeli tanks in the streets of Palestinian cities and maybe soon American tanks in the streets of Iraqi cities, the sense of frustration and humiliation may reach a point where we really don't know what will happen. I mean, I know there are often predictions, you know, that the Arab street will boil over. I don't think it's that simple. We don't know what will happen. But, let's remember that the United States failed to predict the Iranian Revolution, failed to predict the fall of the Berlin Wall, and history doesn't lay itself out in neat flow charts like a Pentagon PowerPoint presentation.
So if not war, what's a viable alternative to war with respect to Iraq?
Well, I think we have to not be put on the spot by the threat of war. Look at how the United States is handling North Korea through diplomacy. I think that if you dealt with Iraq in a realistic way, not in an ideological way, not in a hysterical way, but based on the fact that Iraq doesn't present today a threat to its neighbors, the fact that Iraq is not, that there's no evidence that Iraq possesses any weapons of mass destruction, no evidence of links with al-Qaeda, then the threat shrinks to a size where you can begin to deal with it through diplomatic means and through ordinary politics as the United States deals with other countries. I think that can be done. The Iraqi government has been completely shorn of any ability to cause trouble in the region. But the U.S. approach to it is, I think, destabilizing the region and far beyond that. And this policy is being driven by a group of people, of ultra-neoconservative hawks, who see no difference between U.S. interests and Israeli interests. And I think we have to recognize that Israel is the only country that in the region that is enthusiastic for this war. And I think that should serve as a warning to us about what is going on right now with respect to Iraq.
Ali Abu Nima, editor of the Electronic Intifada and ElectronicIraq.net. In what was perhaps the first anti-war demonstration held by Afghans, hundreds of mostly women and children said no to a war against Iraq in Islamabad, Pakistan this week. Supporters of the Bush agenda to attack Iraq often cite Afghanistan as an example of how the U.S. liberated Afghan women from the, quote, evil rule of the Taliban, unquote, during the hunt for Osama bin Laden. But this protest was organized by the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan, or RAWA. Women
marched to the United Nations office and presented a memo to officials. RAWA spokesperson Shala Hassan said that war is not ever a solution and that the U.S. must come up with a political strategy to deal with the crisis. She quoted a Pakistani newspaper, The Statesman, saying, "The example of Afghanistan is before us, and once the U.S. forces cross into the Iraqi borders, no one is strong enough to get them out," unquote. Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles reports on the march of 600 to 700 Afghan women living in Pakistan who took to the streets against a U.S. invasion into Iraq.
Joining me on the line right now from Pakistan is Marina Mateen. She works with RAWA's foreign office. She's a member. Tell us a little bit about this Monday's march. How many people showed up? Do you think it was a successful march? And what kind of message is RAWA trying to send to the peace movement throughout the world?
RAWA staged a sit-in protest in front of the United Nations office in Islamabad on Monday, which was attended by almost 600 to 700 people from different cities of Pakistan and some refugee camps, Afghan women and children, and some men, of course, and some Pakistani supporters also attended the sit-in protest. And the main points we were giving the slogans of were solidarity we had and we still have with the nation, Iraqi nation, and the anti-war movement of the world, which is going on around the world, we support that. And of course, it doesn't mean that we support Saddam or the fascist regime of Saddam. Of course, overthrowing that regime is something which is totally dependent, and it should be done by the nation of Iraq, not any other country, not any other superpower. It is something totally and 110% related to Iraqi nation. That's, in fact, their wish and their will, which should be practicalized, not U.S.'s or Britain's or any other countries.
And what kind of effect do you think this march had? Do you think that the rest of the world has heard RAWA, and do you think that other Afghan people support RAWA in their anti-war views?
As far as the other Afghans are concerned, we are dead sure, because Afghans suffered in the hands of war and warlords and countries who supported these warlords. They would surely would never like any other nation in masses to suffer like that. They would surely support the anti-war movement throughout the world. And as far as our voice reaching the world is concerned, we tried our best, and we thought of we are a very small organization. We have been contributing, trying a lot with contributing, and we tried to pay our contribution here as well. And of course, we think, because we represented Afghans here, that really makes a difference, because we couldn't see any other very prominent NGO or Afghan organization giving a march for this purpose.
Can you tell us what you think are the real motives of the United States in Iraq?
Well, as far as RAWA's position towards any war is concerned, of course, RAWA being a democratic women's organization belonging to a country like Afghanistan, who is suffering for the last almost three decades under war and warlords in Afghanistan, we, of course, would never wish any other country suffer like Afghans in the hands of Americans, because the way America bombarded Afghanistan in the name of Al-Qaeda, in the name of Osama, though Afghanistan was being used by fundamentalist forces, which were being sort of initiated and created by U.S. itself in Afghanistan and other countries, still that was not the proper way. And as far as Iraq is concerned, the Iraqi nation, the Iraqi people have committed nothing wrong for which they should be punished by a bombardment or any war. I think this is not the solution. That's what RAWA thinks, in fact.
What do you think the U.S. really wants to do in Iraq?
Well, basically, as far as the U.S. is concerned, it's their own policies, and that oil matters, of course. And the point is that U.S. government would really like to have in each and every part of the world such governments which would go according to their wishes, according to their policies and plans. And if Saddam Hussein, though being a reactionary himself, is not acting upon the advices of U.S. policies or U.S. government, of course, he must be blotted out.
Talk a little bit about Afghanistan itself and whether RAWA thinks it is better or worse off after the U.S.'s so-called war on terrorism. We hear George Bush telling us that the U.S. has liberated Afghan women. What does RAWA think?
Well, liberation of Afghan women just does not mean giving them this opportunity, which is not still complete, not to have burqa, and burqa has never been the main problem. And there has been some changes. We look forward towards them. But the main point is that two sides of the coins were changed, and that's what happened in Afghanistan. One fundamentalist force was troubled, and the other one is on par. Taliban are no more there, but they shaved their beards, and now Northern Alliance, having a different face, but the same nature, is working there. So we don't think so. This is a basic change which was needed in Afghanistan, a country like Afghanistan, and which was needed by the people. And, of course, we are optimistic, but we cannot depend and be satisfied that this is what we wanted to, and this is the end of the struggle.
Finally, Marina Mateen, when the United States began bombing Afghanistan in October 2001, and the war in Afghanistan still hasn't ended, we didn't see such a large anti-war movement in the United States. But now, with the prospect of a war on Iraq, we're seeing this large anti-war movement. What do you think the reason for that is? And do you have anything to say to Americans with respect to Afghanistan and perhaps not forgetting that there is still a war going on in Afghanistan?
Well, yes, this is a very unfortunate point that during those days when Afghanistan was being bombarded, there were no such voices. There were voices. We received more than gazillion number of emails from mostly American people who were against the policies of their government. There were some march and all that stuff, but not as big as they're happening for Iraq. One point maybe the way U.S. Propaganda was going on regarding the 11th September and its effect, and of course people lost their ones. Everything was destroyed in New York to some extent, though cannot be compared to Afghanistan's destruction in the last three decades. In the hands of the puppets which were being created by the U.S. and other countries. If that didn't happen in turn of Afghanistan, if it's happening in turn of any other nation, we still welcome it. And of course, they will certainly be in solidarity with us in the coming future.
Marina Mateen is a member of RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. She works with their foreign office. RAWA's anti-war statement said, "War against terrorism for democracy is now well exposed to the people of Afghanistan, where the U.S. courted successive tyrants like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, Mullah Omar, Osama bin Laden, and recently installed the tyrannical rule of the Northern Alliance in Kabul," end of quote. They added that the change of government in every country is the duty of its people. After the U.S. began bombing Afghanistan in October 2001, RAWA issued a statement denouncing the U.S. campaign and calling on the Afghan people to rise up against the Taliban. You can find out more about RAWA at their website at www.rawa.org. That's www.rawa.org. This is Sonali Kolhatkar reporting for Pacifica's Peace Watch.
George W. Bush will have to wait at least one more day to get the okay to use Turkey's military bases as a launching pad for a northern front against Iraq. The U.S. military wants to send 255 U.S. warplanes and 65 helicopters to Turkey and has won approval for the plan from the Turkish cabinet and the Turkish military. But the parliament has been a tougher sell. From the Turkish capital Ankara, Aaron Glantz has the story.
The latest polls show over 90% of Turks oppose a U.S.-led war on Iraq. It's a fact media commentators are reminding the leaders of Turkey's ruling Islamic AK Party as parliament meets behind closed doors trying to decide whether now is the time to lend their support to George Bush.
Evet, top artık mecliste.
As the sun rises over Ankara, Turkey's private Star TV shows a montage of giant anti-war protests mixed with clips of Turkish politicians shaking hands with U.S. officials and pictures of jets dropping bombs on civilians. Then the camera moves to the streets of Ankara. The host of the show urges viewers to boycott American products like Coca-Cola and McDonald's. He asks regular Turks whether they think their parliament should vote for war. Everyone says no. This woman says she is against the war. She starts crying and tells the host she doesn't understand why her son, who currently serves in the Turkish army, should risk his life for the Americans.
Irak'ta savaş hayır diyorsan sen de bir imza ver. Birkaç dolar için kanımızı satmak isteyenlere hep birlikte dur diyelim. Tüm Türkiye bir Mart'ta...
Midday on the streets of downtown Ankara. Activists stand on nearly every corner leafleting, urging everyone to come to a demonstration on Saturday against Turkey's support of a war on Iraq. Organizers hope Saturday's demonstration will draw hundreds of thousands, like the anti-war marches in London and New York. The demonstration's list of sponsors spans the entire political spectrum.
I am against bargaining the blood of the Turkish military.
Yildirim Kutch is chief advisor to the president of Turkish, the largest confederation of trade unions in Turkey. For weeks, negotiations have surrounded the amount of aid Turkey will receive in terms of grants and loans in exchange for its support of the war. Turkey is not like a Latin American country or an African country, he says. It is a proud nation that has never been colonized by any foreign power. The Turkish military should serve Turkish interests and not American interests, he says. Koç also says he's concerned Turkey will further indebt itself to the World Bank and International Monetary Fund as part of an aid settlement. Turkey already shoulders an international debt of more than $100 billion, and as a condition of the loans, the IMF and World Bank have insisted Turkey privatize its government and dismantle its social security system.
The rights to a pension were curtailed to a considerable extent. And in various other areas, problems emerged concerning the provision of the service, health service especially, health care. The quality has gone down following the relations with the IMF and the World Bank. It's not only the IMF, it's the World Bank as well.
Another day passes and George Bush has been unable to win Turkey's support for the war. The AK Party deputies leave their closed-door meeting without an agreement that's acceptable for them. On the bus home, a teacher passes out anti-war buttons and urges people on the bus to come to a rally in Ankara this Saturday. An old man takes a button that reads, "Savaşa hayır," no war, and says he'll be there. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz in the Turkish capital, Ankara.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. We'll be back in a moment.